Okay, so today we're doing a deep dive into, well, a pretty heavy topic. It's the People v. MD case. It's from Illinois back in 1990. And it really, I think it just really fundamentally reshapes how we think about sexual assault law, especially when you think about, this whole idea of a marital exemption. And I think, what makes this case so fascinating is it's like this point where legal tradition just kind of slams into modern ideas about equality. Like, what does it really mean to have control over your own body?
Yeah,
Right.
absolutely. And I think right off the bat, we should acknowledge that the details of this case are sensitive. We're talking about violence, but the real focus here, for us at least, is those legal and constitutional principles that were at stake.
Right, for sure. Because it's not just about, like, what happened in this one specific instance. It's about how the law grapples with the rights and protections of individuals within a marriage.
Just like.
Okay, so where I thought we could start is with, I mean, well, it's a difficult thing to talk about, but I think it's important to lay out the facts of the case that brought this whole thing to light. Then we can kind of trace how it moved through the courts, right?
Right.
And we'll look at the constitutional arguments, see what evidence was used. And then I think, the part that really matters for us is like the lasting impact of this decision. Because to me, people, VMD is like a textbook example of, well, how the law has to evolve to reflect changing values,
Yeah,
you know?
couldn't agree more.
Okay, so let's get into it. What actually happened that led to this whole legal battle?
So we're talking January 11, 1990. The defendant, MD, committed a pretty horrific act of violence against his wife, LD. It was a forced sexual assault. And to be very specific, the assault involved MD inserting his fist into her vagina,
Oh, wow.
which resulted in, just devastating physical injuries for her. We're talking injuries that required surgery. And sadly, she ended up with permanent urinary incontinence.
That's just awful.
It is. And I think it's important to really ground our legal analysis in that reality. This wasn't like an abstract legal debate
Yeah, of
of.
course, a real person suffered because of this.
Exactly.
And so what happened next? I mean, with MD after this terrible event?
So after Amity was arrested, he sent letters, multiple letters actually, to LD, apologizing for what he did that day. And then when he was talking to the police, he actually confessed to the assault.
Wow. I mean, so he admitted to it.
He did. And those letters, his statement, they became really important pieces of evidence as this case worked its way through the legal system.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Those are pretty damning.
Right.
So tell me about like the legal process here. What happened after the arrest?
Well, in the initial trial, the one at the county level, MD was found guilty of aggravated criminal sexual assault. And, not surprisingly, he appealed the conviction, took it to the Illinois Appellate Court. And he had two main arguments in his appeal. The first one, and honestly, this is the big one, was that the marital exemption, which was part of the sexual assault law at the time, was unconstitutional.
Okay, yeah, that's the whole crux of this, right?
Right. And his second argument was about those letters and his statement to the police. He was saying they shouldn't have been allowed as evidence.
Interesting. So it went from the county court up to the appellate court.
Exactly. And, I think it's interesting that during that first trial, the jury actually didn't convict him on all the charges.
Oh.
Some guilty verdicts, some not guilty. So, they were clearly weighing the evidence pretty carefully.
Okay, so let's dig into this marital exemption thing. It seems like, the idea that marriage somehow changes how the law sees assault is just, well, it's bizarre to me. Where did this idea even come from?
Well, it's got deep roots, goes all the way back to like Blackstone's commentaries and those old common law principles of coverture. They were working with this idea of implied consent within a marriage. Basically, if a woman agreed to get married, she was also agreeing to any sexual activity with her husband.
Oh, wow. That is just so outdated.
Right. And coverture, that made things even worse. It was this idea that a wife didn't really have her own legal identity. Everything was tied to her husband.
So she had even less power in the marriage, basically.
Exactly.
So with this appeal, MD was arguing that this whole thing, the marital exemption, was a violation of equal protection, right?
Right, he was. And his argument was basically that the exemption created this like completely artificial line between married and unmarried victims of assault.
Right.
The law was saying that the exact same act could be treated totally differently depending on whether the victim was married to the attacker or not. And his lawyers were saying, listen, there's no logical reason for that.
Yeah, I mean, assault is assault. It shouldn't matter if you're married or not.
Exactly. They argued that it was discriminatory, that the law was making a distinction that had no rational basis, and that violated the whole concept of equal protection under the law.
And that's where the rational basis test comes in, right?
Right.
Like the court had to decide if there was any good reason for this marital status thing to even be a factor.
You got it. That's exactly what the court had to figure out. So they applied this test, the rational basis test, which is how they look at laws to see if they're constitutional. And in this case, the burden was on the state, Illinois, to show that this distinction, this marital exemption, actually made sense. They had to show that it was related to some legitimate role that the state was trying to achieve.
Right, they couldn't just say, well, that's how it's always been, right?
Exactly. So the court looked at a bunch of possible justifications. They considered whether the state had an interest in protecting marital privacy or upholding the sanctity of marriage. But in the end, they rejected all those arguments.
Okay, so they basically said, no, those aren't good enough reasons to allow this to keep happening.
Right. And that's where Justice Dunn, he really made some powerful statements.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading about those. What did he say specifically?
Well, he said, and I'm quoting here, "A marriage license should not be viewed as a license to forcibly sexually assault one's spouse with impunity."
Yeah, wow, that's really powerful.
And he went on to say, and this is another quote, "It is revolting to have no better reason for a rule of law than that, so it was laid down in the time of Henry IV."
I mean, he's not mincing words there, is he?
Nope, not at all. And I think what he's getting at is that, clinging to an old rule just because it's old is just not good enough, especially when that rule, it leads to something so clearly unjust. And, in the legal world, there's always this tension between respecting precedent, that's called stare decisis, and making sure justice is served.
Yeah, I get it. Sometimes the old ways just don't work anymore. So they struck down the exemption. They said those justifications weren't good enough. What happened then?
Okay, so then we move into the evidence part of the case. And remember, we've got that confession from MD and those apology letters he wrote.
Right. Super important, it seems like. But how did they determine if that stuff could even be used in court?
So the defense, they tried to challenge the confession. They were probably saying that it violated MD's Miranda rights, the whole right to remain silent thing.
Oh, right.
But the appellate court, they went back and looked at everything that happened and determined that he'd been read his Miranda rights, before he gave the statement to the police. So he knew what he was doing. He waived his rights. That meant the confession was fair game.
So they could use it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then those letters, well, the court saw those as voluntary admissions of guilt. In the law, when someone does something that shows they know they did wrong, that can be used against them.
Makes sense.
And in this case, those apologies were pretty much a textbook example of admitting guilt.
Yeah, I mean, you don't apologize for something you didn't do.
Exactly.
So you've got those letters plus the physical evidence of the assault. It must have been really tough for the defense attorneys to, try to come up with any kind of counterargument.
Oh, I'm sure it was. To argue against your own client's written apology, especially with such clear evidence of a violent assault, I mean, that's a huge uphill battle. You'd need a rock-solid legal argument to even have a chance. And, in this case, it seems like they just didn't have that.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense. Okay, so constitutional challenge, successful, evidence, admissible. What was the upshot of all this, legally speaking?
Okay, so the big thing, the most immediate outcome, was that the court struck down that section of the Illinois Criminal Code, Section 1218C, that had the marital exemption in it.
Gotcha. So no more exemption in Illinois.
Right. But, and this is really important, they were very clear that getting rid of the marital exemption didn't affect any of the other laws about sexual assault that Illinois already had on the books. So, like, laws against aggravated criminal sexual assault or criminal sexual abuse, all those still stood.
Oh, that's interesting. So they basically just took out the one bad part, but the rest of the law stayed the same.
Yeah, exactly. It's called severability, the idea that you can remove one part of a law if it's unconstitutional, but the rest of it can still be valid.
Huh, that's cool. I
Yeah.
didn't know that. But I mean, this whole thing with the marital exemption, it wasn't just happening in Illinois,
Oh,
right?
no, not at all. In the early 90s, a lot of states were taking a hard look at these laws. There was this growing realization that the whole concept of a marital exemption was just, wrong on so many levels. It
Yeah.
was discriminatory, it was outdated, and it just wasn't providing basic protection to a whole lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that that kind of thing was ever part of the law.
It is, but luckily things were changing, and People VMD, you know, that definitely played a role in pushing those changes forward.
Okay, so fast forward to today, like almost 35 years since this ruling.
Mm.
Do you think the logic that the court used in this case could be applied to other situations? Like, what about other laws that have exemptions based on relationships?
You know, that's a really interesting question. And I think the answer is, yeah, possibly. The core of the court's reasoning in People v. MD, it was all about equal protection. They were basically saying, look, you can't treat people differently just because of their marital status unless there's a really good reason. And that reasoning, that idea that the law shouldn't make arbitrary distinctions based on relationships, well, that could definitely be used to challenge other laws.
So, like, where else could we see this kind of thinking applied?
Well, I think it forces us to ask some tough questions. Like, are there any other laws out there that give special treatment to certain relationships? And if so, are those laws really justified? Do they really serve a legitimate purpose? Or are they just based on outdated assumptions? I mean, remember what Justice Dunn said. He said, the marital exemption is completely contrary to statutory objectives of protecting people from the physical and emotional harm resulting from forcible sexual assaults and preserving their personal bodily integrity.
Yeah, it's all about protecting people regardless of their relationship status.
Exactly.
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the takeaway? Like, if our listeners only remember one thing about People v. MD, what should it be?
Well, I think it's this. People v. MD is a landmark case. It got rid of this archaic, discriminatory idea that marriage somehow meant consent to sexual assault. It established very clearly that everyone has a right to bodily integrity and equal protection under the law.
So it's about recognizing the inherent dignity of every person.
Absolutely. And their autonomy, you know, their right to make their own choices about their bodies, regardless of their relationship status. It was a huge step forward in terms of how the law views and protects individuals.
It makes you think, you know, about all the other assumptions baked into our legal system. What other laws might need a second look?
Right.
Especially now, you know, when ideas about equality and fairness are constantly evolving. I mean, that's the beauty of the law, right?
Yeah.
It's not set in stone. It can change. It can adapt.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, that's a good place to leave it, I think. Thank you all for joining us for this deep dive. It was heavy, but definitely important to talk about.